Alrighty, thanks for coming back after lunch. Appreciate that. Did you have a good lunch? Yes. Me too. We're just going to jump straight back in, is that okay? Yeah. Now, often after lunch, you sit there, you got food, you're digesting, you get a bit sleepy. So make sure that you are drinking lots of water, okay, after lunch. Very, very helpful. What I want to do just really quickly is ask you guys, out of everything we covered in the last hour and 15, 20 minutes, what was most valuable for you so far? Because when you check in and make sure that you've captured a couple of things that you can take away and maybe think about, it will help you big time. So what's been most valuable so far? So the pattern recognition. Okay, cool. We can do that. So the whole idea that we've been set up to fail and how that all works and understanding it from that viewpoint so that you can essentially get out of your own way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, I think it should be taught in school, this stuff. Going to be a lot more useful than trigonometry or something like that for most people. How about over this side? What was most valuable in that last session? All of it. Okay. More about the patterns and stuff, how to see them. Yeah, okay, cool. Okie dokie. Anyone else? Confusion is the doorway to understanding. Yeah. Yes. Right at the start. Yeah, cool. Okay. So I blew your mind in the first 2 minutes. Awesome. Cool. Happens every time. Yeah. That's fantastic. Cool. All right. Had you at numbers. I just realized what you said. So are we right to keep going? Okay. So we ended up talking about the myths. Change takes time and you need years of therapy and affirmations and hammering it in, all that kind of stuff. What I'm going to do is I'm going to bust one of those myths big time now. Okay, and the myth that we're going to look at is change takes time, because it's not true. And it's cool for me to say it's not true, but I think it's probably going to be better if I just show you how it's not true. Okay, so this is a model that some of you may have come across before. We've got down the bottom, this is called the levels of learning. Okay, this is unconsciously unskilled. So you don't know that you don't know something. You are unconscious of it. You don't know that you are unskilled. You don't know you can't do that thing. When you become aware of something and you therefore recognize that you can't do it, that's called consciously unskilled. So you know that you can't do it. And that recognition is instant. Okay? I have a 2-year-old son. Before he knew what shoes were, he didn't know that he couldn't tie shoelaces. Does that make sense? He was unconsciously unskilled. Then he saw shoes and saw someone putting shoes on, an instant recognition that he didn't know how those things worked. All right. From there, from consciously unskilled, where you know you can't do something, to the next level, which is consciously skilled, where you know that you can do it. According to the study that was done on this stuff, where I pulled the data, it takes about 1,000 hours to reach that point, okay, of practice. Now, that depends on the skill. All right. After that, the next level is unconsciously skilled, where you can do something and you don't need to think about it. It's become automatic. It takes about 5,000 hours with a reasonable skill to reach that point. Okay. A great example of this is, for me personally, is in martial arts. So I do a couple of different styles. I do Japanese Jiu-Jitsu and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is all the wrestling on the ground, the stuff the guys do in the UFC and where they're beating each other to a pulp. We don't do that, we just do the wrestle part on the ground. And when you first start, you have no idea. So if you don't know it exists, unconsciously unskilled. You realize there's this thing called Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and then immediately recognize I have no idea how to do that. Consciously unskilled. You go and start doing a class, and there should be a level in there called I know I suck at this. Okay? because that's how I felt at first. So you go and you... For me, I'm not a huge guy, but I've been doing martial arts for like 20 years. I thought I was pretty good. I wrestled a girl about this big and she turned me into a pretzel, tied me in knots, okay? And you hear the coach screaming all these things that you have no idea what they mean, like, get your hooks in. What does that even mean? If you don't understand the vernacular, you can't use it. So you don't understand the terminology, right? They're talking about when you get on someone's back and you wrap your legs around so that they can't throw you off. That's called getting your hooks in. But if you don't know what that means, how are you ever going to do it when you're being told to, okay? So over time, you practice, you become more aware, you become consciously skilled, and then after a while, every time you end up on someone's back, you automatically wrap your legs around because you know they can't throw you off, okay? And that just becomes a muscle memory. You heard the term muscle memory? Yeah, where you've done it so many times. In physiology, anatomy and physiology, it's referred to as an actualized neural network, which means the information is passed along those nerves the same way so many times that your brain always takes the path of least resistance and it sends information along those same nerves versus other nerves because that's the way that's been primed, okay? And in general conversation, we just call it muscle memory. It's like you just remember how to do it. Like even now, who is anyone in here who can't ride a bike? Like a two-wheeler, yeah? Fair enough, that's okay. If you haven't ridden one for years, but you could ride it as a kid, when you get on now, you probably find that you don't all of a sudden just fall over. You get on, you know, sit here, balance, pedal. Here's the handle, I was going to say steering wheel. Here's the handlebars, okay? And you can probably ride, right? Muscle memory. Your brain knows how to do that and you don't have to consciously think about it. After that, we have what's called consciously, unconsciously skilled. This is an awesome level. This is where you can do something without thinking about it and you know that you can do it without thinking about it, right? And this is the level at which people refer to it as mastery. Often people at that level actually have a hard time teaching it to other people because it's become so unconscious for them that it's hard for them to reverse engineer it and break it down for other people. Now, what's interesting about this, have we come across the 80-20 principle before? Everyone's heard of that, I'm assuming. Anyone not know the 80-20 principle? Does anyone not know the 80-20 principle? In any context, just the general idea. So the idea is that 80% of the results or the output in any area comes from 20% of the inputs. Okay, so 20% of your clients are responsible for 80% of your income most of the time. Okay. Conversely, 80% of your clients bring only about 20% of your income. And if you go and do this analysis on your own income, you'll find it is pretty much accurate. All right. There's lots of great books on it and stuff like that, but generally, the idea of 20% of the inputs create 80% of the results is cross-contextually accurate. You can read great stuff about that. Excellent book called 80-20 Marketing that you might want to read as well, by the way. If you look at this, 5,000 hours is 20% of 25,000 hours. Okay? So you can put in 20% of the amount of time to get to 80% of the results. You can be unconsciously skilled. You can be able to perform something at a level where you don't need to think about it. You don't have to go to that level of mastery because it's going to take another 20,000 hours, right? It's going to take five times as long to get you the last 20%. And in most cases, it's not actually worth it, all right? Now, we're talking about hours, but we often don't think in terms of large numbers of hours like this, like 5,000 hours, 25,000 hours. So we'll make it a bit more real. Let's say we're talking about upgrading our mindset, getting rid of all of our fears and becoming more confident and all those kind of things. We want to go from consciously unskilled, so now we know this is all possible, but we don't know how to do it, to unconsciously skilled, where you can just do it and you don't need to think too hard about it. You just know you can do it and you can do it anytime you like. 5,000 hours, if you had 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, so the typical 40-hour work week, to get through 5,000 hours would take you 125 weeks or 2.6 years. All right, so you want to fix your mindset and you do it all day, every day. You stop working and you work an 8-hour day every day, Monday to Friday. It's going to take you 2.6 years. Or you can use the kind of techniques that I'm going to show you here and make the instant change, and then the results either show up instantly or they take a little bit of time? Which one would you choose? So you've got to ask yourself, who wants to shave 2.6 years off your learning curve? Yeah, for sure, right? But who has a 40-hour week to do this? Who has a 40-hour work week to dedicate to upgrading your mindset? Pretty much no one, right? So what if you could work half a day and spend the other half a day working on your mindset? Now it's going to take you 4.8 years. Does anyone have half a day, 5 days a week to work on their mindset? No. How about we be a bit easy on ourselves and work on our mindset 2 hours a day, every single day? Now it's going to take you 9.6 years. Still a bit of a stretch for most people. Who could seriously commit right now to spending 1 hour a day, 5 days a week, working solely on your mindset for a solid hour every day, 5 days a week? To reach that level, unconsciously skilled, 1 hour a day, 5 days a week, it's going to take 1,000 weeks or 19.2 years. So if you don't even have an hour to do it, it makes sense to learn how to do it as quickly as possible so you can shave 19 years off your learning curve. Yeah? So this is actually very important. All right. Now that's a pretty compelling reason to learn how to do this stuff. If you look and ask yourself, am I getting the level of results that I want to be achieving? And if I'm not, and I don't do anything about the subconscious cause of me not getting those results, and I dedicate an hour a day to learning how to do it the traditional way, it's going to take me 19 years to resolve that stuff. Okay? Or we can just go straight into your subconscious mind, remove the bits that aren't working and replace it with something else that's got a higher likelihood of working. Does that make sense? Yeah. That's why I love this stuff so much. So myth busted. Change does not take time. All right? It does if you do it the old way. It doesn't if you do it the way that I'm going to show you. And we're all going to practice this very, very soon. When it comes to change, humans are motivated, very, very simply, we're motivated to avoid pain or gain pleasure. Which one do you think is a stronger motivation for most people? Avoiding pain, okay? Avoiding pain is a much stronger motivation for humans. Humans will do more to avoid pain than they will to gain pleasure, all right? So let's say part of what you have to do in your business to make the money you want to make is get on the phone and sell stuff to people. Is anyone in that situation? Yeah? Okay. Is it fun or is it sometimes a little bit, you don't want to do it, which we're going to call pain? Yeah? We'll do more to avoid pain than we will to gain pleasure. Even though you know, you get on the phone, you talk to that person, you're going to make the sale, you're going to make some money that's pleasurable. We'll do more to avoid the pain of having to go through the process of doing the sales call than we will to experience the pleasurable result that we're going to get as a result of actually making the sale and making the money. Because if we pick up the phone and take the action, all of a sudden we've moved in a direction where we might fail, or we might be rejected, or we might find out that we're not good enough. Does that make sense? Yeah. So people will do more to avoid pain than they will to gain pleasure. When we understand this concept, we go, well, I don't want to be down here. I don't want to be avoiding the pain. I want to be gaining the pleasure. And what I see is people try to make the jump from pain to pleasure, but it's too big of a jump. All right, it's too big of a jump. All the techniques that I use and teach are easily split into two categories. One is those that eliminate the pain, and the others are those that facilitate the achievement of the pleasure. Okay? What we need to do is we need to move through the middle point of no pain. So we know the word remedy, to fix something. There's two types of techniques. One is remedial. Remedial change techniques fixes problems. So it takes us from pain to no pain. Whatever the problem is, like fear of rejection. First thing we need to do is get rid of the fear of rejection. And so then we don't have that anymore. But that doesn't automatically mean that we're going to do the things that we were afraid of doing. We're just in this point of, well, now I have no pain around it, but there's no burning desire to get where I want to go. Once we've eliminated the pain, we need to use other techniques called generative change techniques that allow us to achieve our goals faster and easier. All right? Is this all making sense? Yes or no? Yes. Okay, good. The technique that we're going to do today is actually a generative change technique. So we're going to go from the no pain to pleasure. And this kind of flies in the face of this whole concept a little bit. Because what we're not going to do is get rid of the pain first. Okay? Why? Why would we not do that? I just said that it's something that we have to do. The pain is? Yeah, that could be one reason. The pain's the motivator? Yeah, it could be. You can be motivated to avoid pain or to gain pleasure. For years, I used to teach people, you must get rid of the problem first. We must clear this stuff out before we can then add these new resources. And now I'm saying, even though I just taught you guys this, we're not going to do it. Not necessarily. The reason that I've found practically, and this is something really important, take this in every area of your life. Theory is fantastic, but real world experience trumps theory every time. And what I found in teaching seminars over about a 10-year period is that everything's a test. You understand the concept of split testing, like in marketing? Is this headline going to work better or is this headline going to work better? The only way to know is keep everything else the same and change the color of the headline or one word or something along those lines, okay? What I've found is that you can spend a lot of time going down the rabbit hole of trying to resolve subconscious issues. Or you can figure out how you want to feel, which is a generative change, okay? And you can implement that first, and if it gets you the result, don't worry about going down the rabbit hole, because all you want is the result, and we've only got a limited amount of time on Earth, yeah? If you make that change and it doesn't get you the result, then get rid of whatever the block is. Is that making sense? Yeah? So that's why, instead of doing a technique that we're going to practice here, I'm going to demonstrate in a moment, that where I'm like, okay, think of your big fear and where does it start? Where does it come from emotionally? And let's go back and kind of resolve that. We're not going to do that. Instead, we're going to go from wherever you are now to having the ability to trigger a state of confidence anytime you like. Okay? This is useful theoretically, and it does make a lot of sense, doesn't it? This idea of you need to get rid of the problem before you can start implementing the resources. And I bought into that for a long time, but I found practically that implementing the change you want first to move towards works about 50% of the time. And the other 50% of the time, you do need to resolve the problems first. So why not just try this? Okay? Is it making sense? Okay, cool. So what are the 7 habits of failure? Just call them out. The first one starts with F. Fear. A, attention displacement, which means putting your attention on the wrong thing. Yep, okay. Displacement means not in the right place. Okay. I was indecision. L, yep, we're going to the gym and we don't lift the weights. U, unrealistic expectations, just visualize checks appearing in the mail. Yeah. R, repeating patterns, which is anything mental, emotional, or physical. So pretty much anything. I mean, we're not, the only thing we're living out there is spiritual, metaphysical, you know, mental, emotional, and physical that stops you achieving what you want. And the E was external negative. So anything outside of you that stops you. Okay, cool. So on the flip side, now here's the thing. It takes just one of those 7 habits of failure to sabotage your chances of achieving the results you want. On the flip side, I've found the more of these 7 habits of success that you have working for you, the faster your journey is going to be to achieving what you want. Okay? Do you need them all? I don't think so. I used to say you do. I used to say one of the 7 habits of failure is enough to derail you and you need all 7 of these. But again, through practical experience, I've met plenty of people who have 3, who have 4, who have 5. If you got all 7, you're set. You're going to do really well. And again, it's not all theory. This came from working with and interviewing thousands, if not tens of thousands of people over about a 10-year period. Okay? Probably 13 years, I'd say. The first one, again, it's an acronym, all right, is strategic mindset planning. Now, strategic planning needs to come at the start of anything that you want to achieve. If you don't have a plan, you have no idea if you're on the right track or not. Strategic mindset planning is that stuff I talked about at the start, where we have mental acuity, so understanding how your senses work, how you perceive the world around you, and fine-tuning them to pick up on the patterns that will cause failure or accelerate success. And strategic thinking, where we learn to identify what those problems are and implement tools and processes to eliminate them. So we do the remedial change and implement resources to get what we want. So now we have a word for that too, that's generative change. You see how this all fits together as a big system? Yeah. So strategic mindset planning. After that, we have unlearning. Unlearning. This is the actual process of eliminating the stuff that is sabotaging you in your subconscious mind. And there are literally hundreds, if not thousands, of techniques that you can use to do that. I have a core group of about 40 to 50 different techniques that I use. Next, we have comfort rezoning. Comfort rezoning. You ever seen sometimes there's like a warehouse or an industrial unit or something like that, and it's zoned commercial? Let's talk about a warehouse. And then some savvy developer comes in and gets it rezoned as residential and turns the warehouse into funky apartments. Yep, so he changes the zone. All of a sudden, people couldn't live there when it was zoned commercial, but now you can live there, all right? So they build an awesome apartment block and sell it for gazillions of dollars. The same thing happens with achieving the success that you want. If you live inside a comfort zone, I actually don't like the word comfort zone so much, because sometimes where we are is not comfortable. If you're not happy with your weight or the way you look, if you're not happy with the results you're getting in your life, if you're not happy with the amount of money that you're making, or you don't take enough holidays, or you've got a bad relationship, or it's not where you want it to be, any area of life where things aren't working out the way you want them to, typically comfort is the wrong word. Yeah, but that's what is commonly used in our vernacular, so I use it, but what I prefer is familiar. Familiar. Okay. It's comfortable because it's familiar. You know what it's like, and you know how you operate in that environment and what to expect. When you know what to expect, there's no confusion. When there's no confusion, there's often very little fear, which means you can live without too much danger in that circle. Okay. What happens though, if what you want is over here and it's outside of the circle? Well, you need to rezone your level of comfort to include that. Otherwise, when you try and go for it, you're going to need to exert your force of will or your willpower. Willpower, all kinds of amazing psychological studies on this as well. Willpower is like petrol in your car. It's great when you've got a full tank, but after you've been going for a while, it starts to deplete. And then what happens is what I call the snapback effect. So you get an elastic band and you stretch it out, let one end go. After a while, that's just going to snap back, okay? So people try and leave their comfort zone. They're using their willpower because they haven't become comfortable doing the things that were previously uncomfortable, and so they snap back into their comfort zone. I've talked about going to the gym a few times. That's a perfect example. I had a client who was a gym owner, and I'd always wanted to ask a gym owner this question one day. He was sitting in a seminar, and we talked about the New Year's resolution thing, and I asked him, when the New Year's resolution people come to the gym in the first week of January, how many of them are still coming consistently 2 weeks later? And he said, you're lucky if it's 3%. Yeah? So you've got that core group of people who always come, you get a ton of new signups, and 2 weeks later, 97% of them aren't coming to the gym anymore. Why? Because they didn't become comfortable with that as their new lifestyle. They just went, I'm going to do this. And then they go and they lift the weights, and then they get the delayed onset muscle soreness 2 days later, and they go, this is the worst thing I've ever done. It hurts too much. It's not comfortable. They're not familiar with having that pain and living with that pain. So they snap back into their comfort zone. Okay? Comfort rezoning. Next one we have is consistent action. And this is the opposite of lack of action. Does that make sense to everyone? Is it true? Action is the opposite of lack of action, isn't it? Really? Like on a... Every action has an equal and opposite reaction. Pure physics. Lack of action, the opposite of that is action. But that's not enough if you want to actually achieve something. Because again, if you go into the gym and you go one time and you actually pick up the weights and you do the squats that day and you do it once, you're still not going to get, you're going to get some level of results, but it's probably going to be pain. Yeah? You have to go back and do that every week after week after week and eat well and sleep and drink enough water and all those kind of things. Okay, so you've got to take consistent action. Next, we have entrepreneurial thinking. If you could sum up entrepreneurial thinking, this is interesting in a room full of entrepreneurs. If you could sum it up in one word, how do entrepreneurs think? They think in terms of?
Creativity.
Okay, that's a good one. I've got a specific one in mind. You're not wrong, it's just different than mine. Success? Okay. Why not? Okay, cool. Change? Okay. These are all accurate. What do we think over here? New. Okay. Maybe. Innovative. All right. I thought a lot about this, and I reckon the word that sums it up really well, for me at least, it might not work for you, but the word for me that sums it up is value. Entrepreneurs think in terms of value. Everything that you guys said is, it's all accurate, but I think, the reason I think value is everything we do in business is about value. It's about the business has value. You need to deliver value. You want a value exchange. You want to offer something of value in exchange for the value that you're going to get. So you sell something in exchange for money. That money is worthless in its own right, but it's a representation of value. You can go and exchange it for other things of value that you find valuable. Is this all making sense? So I think that value is the core of entrepreneurial thinking. Now, if you take that and apply it to other areas of your life, like your relationships, and you think in terms of value in your relationships and value exchange, what might happen? Different values. Okay. In business, if I said, for example, I sell presentation clickers and you really need one, all right? And this one is $10,000. Who wants it? Anyone want to give me 10 grand for this? No, this is Steve's, it's not even mine, but I'll happily take 10 grand for it if you want to hand it over. No. What if you really needed one because you've got a presentation starting in 10 minutes in the next room? And I said, this thing's fantastic. I've got one of these exactly the same at home. So I know this is worth about $90 and I'll give this one to you for $2. And you need it. It's brand new. Who'd buy it then? Yeah? Why? The value exchange is heavily stacked in your favor, isn't it? Yeah? And that's how we get people to buy stuff, isn't it? We offer things that they perceive as more valuable than what they have to give us in return for that thing. So what if you took that concept to your relationships and you give overwhelming value, you give more value than you're asking for in return? What's going to happen? How would that change things? How about your health? How about going to the gym? How do you give more value than you expect to get in return? It's just a thing. It's not actually what's going to happen. You're going to go, and no matter what you do, you're going to get more out of it than you put in. But going to it with the idea that I'm going to give as much value as I can in this scenario without thought of what I'm going to get out of it in return, you'll find that the floodgates open in pretty much any area of life. Okay? It's definitely worth thinking about. And I found that the most successful people think in terms of how can I give more value than anyone else. Okay? And the cool thing about that is if someone is giving 100%, or if someone's giving 99% value and they're the best in your industry, you only have to give 1% more to be the best. Does that make sense? Especially if they're giving 10% and you give 11, you're automatically the best. Okay. So next we have selective focus. This is the opposite of attention displacement. If attention displacement is putting your attention on the wrong thing at the wrong time, selective focus is ignoring everything that is irrelevant to what you're trying to achieve. Okay. So focusing exclusively on that. I like to think of it as the difference between a shotgun and a sniper rifle. Okay, so if I was trying to hit the the flash up there on top of this pole, and I had a shotgun. From here, if I pull the trigger, there would be shot, or like bullet holes, all over the wall in about a 5 meter radius, and some of you would probably be dead. Okay? But if I was trained as a sniper, which I absolutely am not, and there was a clear shot, I could probably hit that from a kilometer away and put a bullet straight through the lens. Yeah? And that's the difference between attention displacement and selective focus. All right? Super important. And the people I found who become really successful focus exclusively on what they want to achieve. Right? And then finally, underpinning all of this is self-belief. If you don't believe that you deserve it, that you're worthy, that you can do it, that it's possible, that it's worthwhile, you'll self-sabotage, and it'll happen on an unconscious level. You won't be consciously aware of it happening, but things will happen that for some frustrating reason stop you achieving at the level that you want to achieve. Is this all clear? Is it interesting? Okay. So, how does this actually happen on a practical level? Every single second, we talked about mental acuity, all right? Fine-tuning your senses so you pick up on things other people miss. Every single second, your 5 perceptual senses, sight, hearing, smell, taste, and touch, are being bombarded by, depending on the study you read, between 2 and 10 billion bits of perceptual information per second, which is phenomenal. 10 billion bits of information per second. All right? It's too much for us to handle, too much for our nervous systems to be able to comprehend. And it's been said if you became spontaneously aware of all 10 billion bits, you'd either become enlightened and see the true nature of reality, or you'd go insane. Okay, so it's a fine line. Depends on how you handle it at the time. So what do? We filter that 10 billion bits of information per second, every second, through things like our beliefs, which are what you have decided is true and then reinforced over time. Okay? Beliefs are often, for most people, they're not actually true. Right? Or what I mean is they're not locked in stone, they can be changed. Okay? Your values, which is what you have decided on unconscious level, is important to you. Your criteria. Your habits, behaviors that have become automatic over time. Okay? Your identity, which is the beliefs that you've formed about who you are and your place in the world. Then we have your memories, which if you look into this from a scientific point of view, your memories are your best guess of what might have happened at some point in the past. Okay? Memory is, for most people, very unreliable. And it's been proven that after about 3 to 5 minutes, your perception of the situation is not accurate, which is why eyewitness testimony in crimes is very unreliable. And you end up with the wrong person getting, you know, charged and stuff like that. Your capabilities, which is the level to which you can perform. All right? And conditioning, or the subconscious programming that was embedded into you before a time when you had the conscious ability to decide if you were going to accept or reject that information. Okay? We filter our perceptions every single second through this, and what we end up with is about 134 bits of information, again, depending on the study that you read. So that's out of 10 billion bits. So if I said there's $10 billion on the table at the back of the room there, and you can only have $134, would you feel that's a good deal? Not so much, right? Sorry? You'd race me. So we end up with 134 bits of information. It's still a bit too overwhelming for our super powerful brain. So what we do is we group the like with the like. So this is visual information, this is auditory information, this is information relating to kinesthetics or our body, our movement in space, the temperature in the room, those kind of things. And we break it up into roughly 7 chunks of information. Okay? So they say 7 plus or minus 2, so between 5 and 9 groups of information. What we then do is we use the dictionary in our mind to put a meaning on our filtered perceptions. And at an extremely basic level, we either give it a thumbs up or a thumbs down. This is good, this is not good. All right? The meaning that we put on our filtered perceptions creates our emotions second by second. So if your filtered perceptions are interpreted positively, you will produce positive emotions in response to that. If you perceive it as negative, you'll produce negative emotions. No rocket science there, right? What happens then is your emotions are inextricably linked to your physiology, which means how you use your body. Because emotions are actually the effect of hormones that have been released into your system. That's the cause. Hormones bind to receptors which trigger the response, cause the emotional response. That happens throughout your entire body, and it's an unstoppable process. It's a very important process, and that therefore determines what you do in any specific situation, which produces your behavior. Your behavior directly produces your results, which is a surprise box, depending on the situation. And where it gets really interesting is that you then perceive your own results. Okay? So, this is called a self-perpetuating feedback loop. Where it gets really interesting, anyone heard the term self-fulfilling prophecy? Yeah? Like, if you believe you're going to fail, you're probably going to fail. Yeah? You perceive circumstances as... I need to get up on stage and do a presentation. Obviously, that's what I'm perceiving right now. I run it through my beliefs. I'm not a good public speaker. People are going to reject me, and I'm afraid of failure. Okay? Obviously, not mine, but as an example. What meaning would I put on those filtered perceptions? That sucks, right? It's going to produce my emotional state, which is going to be negative. I'm going to be in fear. That floods my body with the hormones related to fear. So I go into fear. That determines how I use my body. Therefore, that determines the results I get, and I give a terrible presentation and everyone boos and throws tomatoes, which I then perceive, and I go, I told me I was right. Yeah? I told me so. Okay, so you get to say, I told me so. And then that spiral continues on a downward spiral. Is this making sense? We can change any part in this process and we'll get a different result. And the cool thing about it is with the remedial change techniques and the generative change techniques, there are literally hundreds of ways to do this. And you can just pick the area that you want to change. You want to change your behavior? We can install a new behavior in 7 minutes at a subconscious level. So in that situation, it's triggered and you act differently. You want to change your emotions? Hundreds of ways to do that. I'm going to show you one today. You want to change the meaning, the perception that you're putting... The meaning you're putting on your filtered perceptions, we can change that. You want to change any of the filters, we can change those. Okay? And if you want to fine-tune your perceptual senses so that you pick up things other people miss, there's ways to do that too. This is how awesome your human body is and what you're capable of. But did anyone learn how to do that in school? You don't learn how to do it, right? So it's crazy. I'm teaching my kids how to do this, which is pretty awesome, I think. You guys enjoying this so far? Yeah. So reality is imaginary, right? 10 billion bits of information per second, but we can only focus on 134 bits per second, and then we group it into roughly 7 chunks. If you do the maths, what you're focusing on right now is 0.000000134% of reality. Yet people will fight wars and kill each other over that. Amazing, isn't it? My 1/1,000,000% is true and yours is wrong, so bang. Yeah. Bit crazy. Right now you're perceiving and focusing on 1/1,000,000% of reality. And that is producing the results you're getting in your life right now. So, directly causes fear, if you have fear, directly causes any other emotional state, which directly causes your results. You've got to ask yourself what might happen if you change where you focus. What do you reckon? Change your results. Absolutely. Is that good or awesome? It's pretty cool, hey? Who, when I said, how would you rather feel, who said empowered before? Where we're going, this is my fear, this, yeah, is that empowering? It's amazing, right? I find it amazing. Shocking facts, though. 95% of people do absolutely nothing with what they learn. Now, I want to put this in your face right now because we're spending... You know, I drove 8.5 hours to be here, and you guys have invested your time to come here, the one resource you can never get back, and you're listening to me talk for about 3 hours, you poor buggers, and I'm teaching you all this stuff, and then statistically, 95% of you are going to leave and never look at anything you've written here again and never use any of this ever again. Does that sound like a good plan? No. I think that sucks. And I reckon you want to be in the other 5%. Now, the reality of it is that you're actually much more likely to be in that 5% because there's hundreds of people who could have been here that aren't. So you probably are the 5%, which is the good news, okay? But you want to make sure you're in the 5%. And here's how you do it. We need to put it into action. There's three keys. I keep doing this. There's three keys. Three keys to success. I'm getting there. The first time I said three, I went like this. Now I went like that. Next time I'll probably get it. Three keys to success. This is all based on science and psychology. The first one, speed of implementation. So we spent quite a while going through theory. In a minute, we're going to do something very practical. The faster you put something into practice after you've learned it, the more likely you are to succeed. It just makes sense because the more time you've got then to test and measure and improve on what you've done. Okay? But if you wait 2 weeks and go, oh, I'll come back to that in 2 weeks' time, you've lost those 2 weeks where you could have got all the information you needed to do it better next time. The second key to success is spaced repetition. Doing something once or twice is often not enough to create lasting change in your life. You need multiple exposures over time. So I recommend you come back to these notes on occasion and read through them at least once a week for the next probably 2 to 3 weeks. Just highlight the important bits and go back and make sure this is fresh in your mind. Okay? And practice the technique. You've all got the script in your book and we're going to go through it. You get a real world experience in a moment. Practice it with yourself and your friends. You can't hurt someone with what I'm going to teach you. Okay? If you've got kids, teach it to your kids. It's phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. And the third thing is multi-sensory stimulation. So the more senses you involve in learning and practice, the faster it sinks in and the faster you succeed. Okay? Those are the three keys to accelerated learning. Speed of implementation, spaced repetition, and multi-sensory stimulation. You get those three things working. We're going to do all of them now because we're going to do the technique. We're going to do it once here, and then you can do it as many times as you like at home. Okay? And the technique has multi-sensory stimulation built into it. So we make sure we tick all three of these. So we're going to learn how to master our emotions and live without fear. Sounds cool? Yep. Okay. I spoke once at a seminar full of American people. Yeah. And you ask a question to a room full of Americans, and they're like, yeah, woo, they go crazy. And it could be like, you could say, was that good? And they're like, yeah, it's incredible. And you could have just said the most life-changing thing to a room full of Australians. And you go, is that good? And you go, yep. Yep. And that's about the level of enthusiasm. That's 100% for us right there. It's awesome. It does mean we don't need to jump around like nutbags on stage, though. Yeah. So what we're going to do is we're going to create an emotional trigger. It's awesome that Steve talked a bit about triggers and buttons and stuff this morning. I'm going to show you how to actually set one. Okay? There's two ways, traditionally, that this happens. And the technique I'm going to teach you guys is called a resource anchor. It comes directly from neurolinguistic programming. I didn't make this up. I just shortened it. All right? I cut the fat from what I'm going to teach you. Now, typically, you have to reach a peak state of the emotion that you want to feel and then lock it in at that time. I'll explain the science behind this in a second. And that's the way it's always taught. What I found, and Steve and I were talking about this at lunchtime, is I did the training and learned how this stuff, and then I went off on a crazy self-teaching journey. And I went and stopped going to seminars and reading books and doing research online and watching DVD programs and on anything I could find. And where I really became good at this is actually when I started studying magic and mentalism and stage hypnosis, okay? Because they do the exact same thing that I'm going to teach you here, but they do it outside of people's conscious awareness, which is amazing when you think about it. I'm going to show you guys, I'm going to like read through a script and do this, stand like this, close your eyes, blah, blah, blah. You go and see a hypnotist on stage and you walk up and they shake your hand and you know, pull on your arm and say sleep, and people go unconscious. It's called instant induction. Whereas in a traditional hypnosis school, you're taught it takes 15 minutes to 45 minutes to induct someone into a trance. It does if you do it their way, but it's also absolute rubbish. Okay? So I found there's another type of trigger setting that I call progressive, where if we can get you into a peak state and you go from 0 to 100%, you're at 100%, all right? We can do that and it works. But when we do this technique, if you find you don't get to 100% confidence when we run through it and you get to 20%, you can do the same thing 5 times. And what's 5 times 20? 100, okay? You get the same result. But there's no other, as far as I know, no other person who teaches this stuff who would actually say that. They go, no, if you didn't get to the peak state, it didn't work. It's just not true. You always get a result. It just might not be at the level of your expectation. And the gap between expectation and result is called reality. Does that make sense? Yeah. Or what's actually happened. So there's different types of triggers. We need to know this because I'm going to show you how to set what's called a kinesthetic, a physical trigger. Okay, we're going to do something like squeeze our fist to create the feeling of confidence. Probably sounds insane right now, but it'll make sense in a minute. There are all different types of triggers. For example, a picture. Who has kids again? How do you feel when you look at a picture of your kids? Generally pretty great, right? Yeah. So when I travel, I always make sure I take heaps of videos and photos of my kids just beforehand so I can watch them and, you know, stay in a really good mood when I'm away, because I actually don't like being away from my kids. So it could be a picture. It could be a sign. Like you're driving down the road and for some reason there's this red sign and it's got eight sides and it's got a word in the middle and it says stop. What do you do when you see that sign? You stop. Or, yeah, potentially you die. But why do you stop there? Because it's a visual trigger that you've been conditioned to accept when you see it. Yeah, it's not like when you see it, someone else jumps in and puts their foot on the brake. You see it, and then you respond. Okay, it's a trigger. It could be a symbol. For example, what's this mean? Peace. And if you turn it around, it elicits a completely different emotional response, doesn't it? Good luck. Okay, cool. See, for me, I'm saying peace to you guys, and now I'm just saying peace to myself. Yeah? It could be a sound, a song, or a voice. Does anyone cringe when their phone rings, when you hear your ringtone? You're like, eh. Yeah. Depends on which ringtone. Or do you have a favorite song? Who has a favorite song? What's your favorite song? Eye of the Tiger? No? That one, the Black Eyed Peas. And how do you feel when it comes on? It's awesome, hey? Yeah. Cool. A good night. Okay, we'll leave it there. So, for me, when I was a kid, I was a huge Superman fan. Always loved Superman. And now I've got the Superman theme song as the ringtone on my phone and the alarm for when my phone goes off. So when my I get up at 6 every day. When the alarm goes off on my phone, it's the Superman ringtone. How do you reckon I feel when that goes off in the mornings? Bring it on. Let's bring on the day, okay? So it puts me in a specific emotional state. Could be someone's voice, someone that either makes you feel great or not great, okay? Kinesthetic is feeling, touch, or spatial. There's a whole range of this that we can't go into now, but you probably notice I move around a little bit. It's not by accident. I have been slowly conditioning you guys to expect certain types of information from me when I stand in different areas of this, what we'll call stage, okay? Does that make sense? Yeah, no, not really. So what I'm talking about is every time I deliver a certain type of information, for example, if I told a joke every time I stood here, and I did that 3 times in a row, and every time I finish the joke, I walk back over here, when I walk back here, you'll expect a joke subconsciously, all right? And if I say something that's not particularly funny, you'll probably still laugh because you've been conditioned. It's called associative conditioning. The best example I ever saw of this was Jim Owen. You know the comedian, Jim Owen? He came out on stage at a comedy gala and he didn't talk. He walked around like this. And he kept doing this. And you get to one point on the stage and people are laughing. They're laughing a little bit and then they'd crack up. And he'd walk away, a little bit of laughter, walk back over here, everyone cracks up again. And he went, I'm just trying to find the funniest spot on the stage. Which is great, but he'd actually been conditioning people. And then later on in his routine, if he's over here and he'd tell a joke and people didn't laugh, he'd go, oh, and everyone would crack up again. Yeah? Very, very clever use of what's called spatial anchoring. Okay. Then we have olfactory smell. Do you ever smell something that takes you back to Nana's kitchen or something like that? Yeah. Cool. And taste, the same kind of thing. Like you taste something and all of a sudden you remember when you're a kid and blah, 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 right? These are super powerful. We're going to set one on purpose. This is what I call your emotional chemistry set. Can you? You probably can't see that super clearly there. This is a nerve. Okay, it's called a neuron. We're going to talk about nerves and hormones. So neuro means nerve. Hormones are part of your endocrine system. Okay, it's about as sciencey as it's going to get. Okay, so down this end of the nerve, we have these little tree-like branches that poke out called dendrites. And what they do is they touch the end of other nerves. And information jumps from the end of one nerve to the dendrite and then in through that nerve. It comes in here, which is called the nucleus. This is the brain in every cell. All 13 trillion cells have a nucleus in your body. And the job of the nucleus is to decide what to do with the information that's just been passed to that nerve cell. Are we going to stop it here? Or are we going to send it further along? All right. Most of the time, it continues. It continues along this part that is a bit blanked out on the screen, which is called the axon, or the body of the nerve. It's like a copper wire. Around the nerve, there's blue stuff called myelin sheathing, which is like the insulation around a copper wire. Okay. Why do we insulate copper wires? Keep the charge so it doesn't dissipate along the way. If we didn't have if we had insulation and then none and then insulation, you got 100% comes in, some would dissipate, and maybe you've got 60% left. Okay? Same thing on your nerve. Demyelination, when the myelin breaks down, is the cause, one of the causes of multiple sclerosis. Sclerosis means scarring. The myelin gets scarred, it breaks down, and the information in the nerves escapes. So not everything that starts here doesn't reach it here, and then you got this happening. Okay? At the other end, we have what's called the axon terminal. Okay? The end of the axon. This here is blown up in this view. Notice the nerves, this part here, this is the end of a dendrite, so it's one of these little guys blown up under a microscope. Notice the nerves don't touch. No nerves in your entire body touch. Did you know that? Pretty cool, eh? There's a gap between the end of every nerve and every other nerve, and that's called the synapse. The gap's called the synaptic cleft. There's a test on this at the end. Now, you don't have to remember any of this. I'm just explaining it so you understand the science behind what we're going to do, because it can seem a little bit like the personal development fluff and woo-woo to say you can create a button that causes confidence anytime you like. So when I explain the science behind it, you get that it's real. Okay? Is that cool? Is that coming across? Okay. So, in order for electrical information to jump from the end of one nerve across the gap to the next nerve, the gap must be filled with what's called a neurotransmitter, or chemical cocktail, combination of hormones that fills the gap between the nerves. What's a great conductor of electricity? Water. Hormones are like 99.99999% water and some other stuff. It's a great conductor of electricity. It allows the electrical impulse, the thought, or the impulse to jump across the gap. Okay. When you go into a specific emotional state, your entire nervous system gets bathed in neurotransmitters. It's always happening, and they change all the time. When you go into a specific emotional state like fear, the reason you're in fear is because your brain released hormones into your system that bind with receptors that create the feeling of fear. Okay? Now, if that is what's filling the gap between all of your nerves, then okay, that's fine. What if we want to feel confident and we want to be able to feel that anytime we like? What we can do, and this is where it gets amazing, is we can go into a state of confidence. And when we're there, if you're feeling confident, you know that your brain has triggered your endocrine system to release the hormones that cause you to feel confident. So at that time, you know the gaps between your nerves are filled with the hormones of confidence. If we then do something specific, like hold our arm at 90 degrees and squeeze our fist, we're using nerves to make the muscles contract and squeeze our fist. Okay? What's awesome about your brain, and this is where we can reverse engineer this process, the next time that we want to feel confident, your brain will take the path of least resistance in deciding which hormones to release to fill the gaps between those nerves when you produce the exact same stimulus. well, last time I squeezed my fist, we released these hormones to fill the gaps between the nerves, and that worked really well. So the path of least resistance, when I squeeze my fist, is to release the same hormones to fill the gaps, and that's going to let the information travel along those nerves. And as a side effect of that, because we release those same hormones, we go back into the same emotional state, which is confidence. Is this making sense? That's how you hack and reverse engineer that process that's naturally occurring to use it anytime you like. Is that awesome? Yeah, it's cool, hey? This whole body of knowledge came about because a guy called Ivan Pavlov rang a bell when he was feeding dogs. Yeah? Actually, it wasn't a bell, it was a tuning fork. But most people think it was a bell. Steve, you were talking about this earlier, right? Like, they put food in the bowl, the dogs come, and they ring the bell as they start eating. And then they do that over and over again. It's called associative conditioning. They associate to that specific state, which is a combination of how you think, feel, and act at any point in time. And it includes the uncontrollable automatic processes that happen in your body. Like, if I say, think of your favorite food, and imagine you're eating it, you actually start to salivate slightly in your mouth. And this is where it gets awesome. In your saliva, you'll produce the specific enzymes that your stomach needs to break down that specific type of food. You can't control these kind of things. It happens automatically. Yeah. And so, because we ring the bell when the dogs want to eat, and then we move the food, and another time when they're not hungry, we ring the bell, all the same physiological changes happen. They start salivating, their stomach acid gets activated. That's what they're actually studying. Not can we make dogs eat when we ring a bell. Is that cool? And that has become this for humans. Yeah? So we could call this human dog training or something. Who knows? So. How do we make it happen? We set up a button, okay? The button is what I call a focus trigger. It's for a specific reason, to produce a specific result. The button creates a response. That's called the state, combination of how you think, feel, and act, or what you do at that time. Then we need to analyze that state and go, did it get us what we want? If it didn't, we need to change the response, okay? Set up a different button to produce a different response. If it does, then we can transition either to the next naturally occurring state, or we can press another button and control how we feel, okay? Remember, I'll give you guys these slides so you can actually reference this afterwards. So how we're going to do it is we have, in your experience, the past, we have a present, where we are now, and we have a future. Can anyone, or actually you all need to be able to answer yes to this, hopefully. Has everyone had an experience in your life where you felt really, really confident? Doesn't matter what the context is. It could be you felt confident as a parent one day, you felt confident on stage, you felt confident driving your car, you felt confident tying your shoes, whatever it is. The more powerful, the better. Anyone not have something like that? Okay, fantastic. You want to remember what that is, okay? What we're going to do is we're going to, from now, remember a time in the past when you felt that way. And using suggestion, I'm going to take you back there in your mind so that you can re-experience that. Then we're going to amplify that experience so that you go into that emotional state. We're going to do the association part. All right, we associate into the experience where you had that feeling. We're going to pump it up so that your body floods your system with the neurotransmitters that cause confidence as the result for you. Then we're going to lock that in by creating a button. That's called anchoring the state. Okay. Then we're going to come back to now. We're going to test it out, because if we don't test it, how do we know if it works? Then what we're going to do is we're going to use our imagination and we're going to test it out in the future. That's called future pacing. And this is where you allow your mind to accept that it's possible that this can continue to work in the future. Okay? By testing it out in an imagined future scenario, we already know it works now. We want to know, is it going to work under pressure? Okay. And then once we know that, we come back to now, and you have a button you can press anytime you like when you want to go back into a state of confidence. Cool? Yes? Cool. Good. So, now I need a volunteer. Slow down. You happy to do it? Yep. Just tell me a little bit about the... Do you have a fear? Yeah. Can you tell me what it is? Okay.
So that's one fear.
Yep.
Fear of claustrophobic in underwater situations.
Okay.
So that's not a business fear.
Okay. With the money one, how would you rather feel in that scenario?
I would rather feel very comfortable that I can say this is what my what I've valued. The value that you're going to give me is worth the amount of money that I expect that I'm going to get from you.
Okay.
I don't know if that makes sense. But
it does. So... sum that feeling up into one word. I want to feel
confident.
Okay, that'll do. Are you happy to come on out?
Yeah,
come on down. Cool. Fantastic. So, at this point, you all have a page in your notes that looks like this. And what I want you to do is follow along. It's right next to the picture of my head on the next page. Okay? Thanks for coming down. I can't remember your name.
Larry.
Larry, okay, cool. So, just come and stand here, Larry. Cool. So the way this script works, this is also designed strategically to allow you to develop unconscious skill with this technique. Right now, you are consciously unskilled. You've probably never done this before. So on the right-hand side, it says what to say. You're going to read that word for word, all right? And we've got each step in the process explained on the left-hand side. After a while, you'll find you don't need to read it word for word anymore. You can just look down, as your skills are building, you can just read, okay, the point here is establish the state. I know how to do that now. I've done it 10 times, okay? I've done it more than 10 times. But first time for everything. You won't need to read everything. You'll be able to ad lib a bit as your skills improve, and you can just read the points down the left-hand side. The third step is once you know the process inside out, you can leave this on the counter and just talk. Okay, which is pretty cool. And after that, you don't even need to talk. You can just close your eyes and do it for yourself, and it takes you about 30 seconds to do this for yourself. Okay. Now, I don't need the script. I can do this off the top of my head. From a teaching point of view, if I don't follow the script, typically you won't follow the script, and I want you to, so I'm going to read it, and that way I want you guys to read it too. Don't try and go through this at the same time now, because you're going to practice with each other. Now is the time to watch how it's done. Okay? Cool. You're about to, yeah? Yep. I'll get two done. Okay. So, the fear is, in a nutshell, asking people for money.
Services.
And you'd rather feel confident that when you ask people for money, it's going to go well?
Yeah.
Yep. And that you're worth it, and you know you're worth it, and all those. Okay, cool. That's all wrapped up in confidence for you.
Yes.
Beautiful. Is there a time you can remember when you've felt really confident?
Yes.
Okay. Can you tell me what, if it's cool,
yep,
what it was?
Yeah. I was traveling through India, and we were basically doing trekking.
Yep.
And one particular day, we decided, there was five of us, we decided to go for a bit of a run up this little mountain. It wasn't just a little mountain, so we got to the top, and it was exhilarating. All five of us, we just collapsed at the end of it. And we're just so amazed that we managed to not only walk up, but also run up certain sections. And we get there, and you're looking back down at where you've just come from. It's fantastic.
Very cool.
Just spectacular.
Sorry. Yeah, thanks, Steve.
So, I'm going to read this pretty much word for word. Okay, I might ad-lib a little bit at certain times, and you can too, a little bit, but in general, stick to the script. So what I need you to do is think of an emotional state that would be most helpful in a particular situation. So what we've kind of set that frame already. You want confidence when asking people for money, okay? So here's where I'd pause for the answer, but now we know what that is. What we need to know is, what are you going to use as a button to bring that back? If you've never done this before, a simple one, it needs to be something that's easily remembered and repeatable. It's just holding your arm at 90 degrees and squeezing your fist for like a second. You don't have to squeeze it for 5 seconds. You can just go squeeze like that. Okay? You happy with that?
Yes.
Okay. There's no other kind of situation where you do that a lot?
Maybe if I'm angry, I might.
Okay. Probably not.
But that's not the right
That's not what we're trying to achieve. No. We want a signal.
So yeah, hold this up to your mouth as you talk.
We want to achieve a positive signal.
So if you do this when you're angry, maybe you want to do it up like this, or you want to click your fingers like that. Do you just do that randomly?
I can't say that I do.
No. You do it one-handed randomly because you're going to need to hold the mic as well.
It's not clicking real well, but there
okay,
it goes.
Good. So either one of those is fine. Just pick the one that feels right to you. Okay. Now, what I want you to do is remember that time when you're running up the mountain, okay, when you were totally confident. You can remember that?
Yeah.
Beautiful. Go ahead and close your eyes. Now, I want you to remember that specific time, there you are in India. Most people walk, but you guys ran up the mountain. It's amazing, okay? I want you to really start visualizing that in your mind. There you are, running up the mountain. We're on step 4 now for you guys here. I want you to go back to that time now. Go right back to that time. You can see it clearly, okay? And I want you to imagine that you could float or step into your body so that you're really there in that experience right now. Good. You there?
Mm-hmm.
Great. And I want you in your own body in that experience so you can see what you saw, hear what you heard, and really feel the feelings of being confident now. And now notice what you're thinking, as well as any patterns of thinking, anything that goes over and over in your mind in that state of confidence. Notice your body and your behaviors and all the obvious details and the subtle details too. What it's like to be that confident. Then focus more internally and notice your inner representations. These are the pictures, the sounds, the feelings, any smells and tastes, and the self-talk. The things you're saying to yourself when you're that confident. And the qualities of those pictures, sounds, feelings, smells, and tastes as well. That's good. If you guys notice, he's nodding a little bit as we go. Yeah. People don't need to give big verbal confirmation. You just watch. Right? Now it's time to enhance this state of confidence and your experience of it by amplifying and turning up all of the qualities that you noticed. Make the pictures brighter, more colorful, moving, and bigger. And amplify the sounds so that they're crystal clear and loud and compelling and strong. That's right. Now, focus on the feelings and turn them up also, noticing where in your body they start and then having them grow and spread those feelings throughout your entire body. And keep turning them up, enhancing all the sights, the sounds, and the feelings until they're as strong and compelling as possible. And keep doing that until you reach the absolute peak of that state. When you feel it so very intensely and it can't get any better, you can create your button by squeezing your fist or clicking your fingers. That's right. Perfect. Now go ahead and open your eyes. What I want you to do now, what was that like, first of all?
Oh, it's great.
Pretty awesome.
Visualize what was happening.
Fantastic. Just kind of shake it off a little bit. We're just going to use your nerves in a slightly different way. Do you drink coffee?
Really?
Okay. You know what it smells like, though?
Fantastic smell.
Yeah. Just imagine that you're smelling coffee. Okay. This is called breaking the state. We just need to use some other senses. Okay. So, now what we need to do, we're on step 9, is we're just going to test the button. All right. What I want you to do is I want you to do whatever you did, activate the button, and notice how quickly that feeling of confidence comes back to you. So go ahead and do that. And what's that like?
It's great.
It's great. Okay, so it comes back straight away.
Yeah.
So what we've done is we do this, the brain releases those chemicals, uses them to fill the gap between the nerves, happens instantly, bang, side effect, straight back into the feeling of confidence. Cool? Pretty awesome, right?
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah. Come on, Aussies. Yeah, it's good, yeah. Cool. Now, what I want you to do, good, you get US citizenship after that. I want you to imagine a time in the future, okay, where this feeling of confidence will be useful. So a time when you're going to ask someone for money. All right, so go ahead and close your eyes and imagine a time where you're going to ask someone for money. And as you think about that time now and imagine what it'll be like, go ahead and squeeze your fist to activate the button again. And hold your mic up as you do this. What differences do you notice in that situation now?
I believe what I'm asking for is what I'm worth, and they're going to get value out of it. So, I think I'm going to offer maximum value to them for
Fantastic.
Their offer what they're prepared to pay for my services.
Pretty cool, eh? So, thank you very much. You can open your eyes now. Round of applause. And one for Larry. No, that's it. I've got to work that dumb joke in at least once in every presentation. Cool. So, that's how the process is done. Simple. It took about 10 minutes because I stopped and explained as we went. Maybe eight or nine minutes. You can do this in 7 minutes, all right? What I want you to do, you know what the fear is. You know how you'd rather feel. Grab yourself a partner and run through this process right now. You've got 7 minutes per person, and that will cut slightly into our break. Is that cool, guys? This is literally the last thing that I need to do. Okay. All right, so grab yourself a partner. We have no time to spare. Get in and get it done, and then we'll debrief, and we've literally got like 10 minutes left to go. Elaborate.
Tingly up my fingers.
Tingly?
My heart.
Yeah.
Not having a heart attack.
And then I come across the chest, yeah.
Someone call an ambulance.
Yeah.
Nice.
I haven't killed anyone yet, Dylan. This is open first. That's awesome. Someone else? You said awesome. What was...
Like the visualisation and the really feeling it grow inside you. And then... kind of like part of yourself is going, yeah, I'm focusing on that, but you don't expect the experience when you actually do squeeze your hand when you've got your eyes over, you go, oh, let's just come back.
Yeah.
Like that's the thing, that it's a part of you being Australian, it's like push
yeah. Yeah.
And then you're like, wow, that works, yeah, that immediate.
Yep.
I didn't share this at all through the presentation, but the thing that got me into this stuff originally is when I was 21, the day after I turned 21, I was held up at gunpoint, and I had post-traumatic stress disorder for 5 years, and I tried all different things, and one day I went to a seminar on this stuff, and they went, the next technique is good for fears and phobias, and we've also used it successfully with PTSD. Who wants to volunteer? And I sat there going, like that. In front of 100 people, it took 10 minutes, and the PTSD was gone. I opened my eyes, and I couldn't find a trace of it inside my body, and I went, that is unreal. What just happened? And I just went rabbit hole. Yeah. Don't know if I've come out of the rabbit hole yet. Someone else, what was it like over here? Cool. No, yeah. Yeah, it was cool?
Yeah, I actually felt the sensation
Got yeah, the sensation, okay.
Yeah, and, like my body even sort of like, you know, my stomach sort of sucked in, because that's how I felt at the time.
Yep.
Oh, wow.
Fantastic.
Is that cool? Like, you guys like that technique?
Yeah.
It's pretty awesome, eh? Now, really quickly, does anyone have any questions? We had one over here. Do you want to ask that question?
Yeah, so do we have to practice this on our own to make it stronger?
To make it stronger, okay. The question was, do I have to practice this on our own to make it stronger? The answer is maybe. It's no and yes. If you got to the 100% intensity and you're happy with that, the peak, remember I showed you guys that slide? Then no, you're done. Bang, you hit 100%, you've got the trigger. If it worked anyway, you didn't get to 100%, then you got to 50% and you want to get to 100%, do it again. And then you just do it with the exact same trigger, okay? You can use a different time when you felt confident. That's called stacking anchors. Okay? You can actually put any emotions together. You just don't want to use competing emotions like fully energized and completely relaxed, because that's just confusing for your nervous system. Okay? It does weird things. But if it worked for you, which it did for everyone here from what I've heard, you don't ever need to do it again. It's set. It's done. That's all that needs to happen. Like, do you have to constantly keep learning to stop when you see a red light? You don't have to. The trigger is set. You have the response. Okay? Good question. Can you do it again if you want to? Yeah, you can do it anytime you like. Or you can do it with something else. Okay? Yep. Yeah. I have one on pillow. It doesn't matter which pillow. But when I lay down, I got myself into an intense, relaxed state. I did this night after night for about a week, the progressive anchoring. I'd hold my head about 5 centimetres from the pillow, get into the state, and then put my head down and close my eyes. If I want to go to sleep now, I could be wide awake, just had a coffee, and I'll go and lay down. I get comfy in bed. I put my head on the pillow. I'll lift it 5 centimeters up, take a breath, breathe out, close my eyes, put my head down. Within about 30 seconds, I'm unconscious. Is that cool? Yeah. It's all different ways to use this. Yeah. A great one is music. So pick a song for when you start your work day. Yeah? And pick another one for when you want to transition out of work so you're not thinking about it when you go home. And if you live somewhere different than when you work, than where you work, listen to that song on the way home. You don't even need to do anything active after you've set it up. Just put the song on. By the time you get home, you're out of work mode. Yeah? There's so many ways to do it. I'll hang around for a bit because we're going to have a break, I think. Yep. And if you've got more questions, that's cool. Now, if you guys want, write that down and you can download the guided MP3 version of me. You are, but for now, if you want that like today, yeah, you can download that. That's free. Sorry, that should say 7minutemarketing.com. I had to, for whatever reason, I had to put it on a different domain, okay? 7minutemarketing.com, and the rest of it's the same, /LP/instant-confidence. I just didn't update the slides. Or you can take a photo. Yep. And that's it. Now, really quickly, the last thing I want to do, hold myself accountable. Has anything you've learned in the 3 hours that I've been up here, do you think it will help you be more successful? If the answer is yes, yell out yes. Pretend you're American. Yes. Okay, cool. Yeah. Will it help you make more money?
Yes.
Hell yes. And will it help you be a happier person?
Yes.
So I've delivered on all three. Yes. Pretty cool. I can go home happy. You can go home feeling however you want to feel, probably confident. And that's it for me. Thank you very much for having me.
Awesome. Stella, fantastic, mate. Great job.
Thank you.
Well done. Great, huh? Yeah. Awesome. Any questions for Nick before he leaves?
Stacking emotions.
Yes.
So if you stack up two lots of confidence, does that enhance the
peak?
Does it enhance the result?
The result or the triggering or what's the advantage?
If you've got one of confidence already, for example, when I'm speaking in public, I want to feel confident. But confidence is not enough because I could be confident and I could mumble through the whole thing. So I also want to be eloquent. I want to be easily understood and clear in my speaking. Okay? And I also want to be calm. I don't want to be jumping around all over the place. So confident, eloquent, and calm. Those are the three states that I stacked onto. I was telling you guys before, the anchor for me before I come out on stage is I clap my hands and I rub them together. And when I do that, I go into that state of confident, eloquent, and calm. Okay? And does that come across when I'm speaking? Yeah. That's the advantage, is you can control how you feel at any point in time. You don't actually need to do the anchoring to control how you feel, the setting the button. All you need to do is think of the emotional state that you want to be in, associate to a time when you felt that way, and then fill your body up with it. The association is what makes the change. The conditioning, where you set the button, is if you want to bring that back on purpose anytime you like. You can, like I said, after a while, you don't need to follow the script and read the bullet points down the left. You can just go, when I leave here, I'm going to go and stay at a friend's place, and we're going to have a couple of glasses of wine and a chat, and I might just want to be, let's just call it, in a good mood. So I remember the last time when I wasn't speaking, so I'm not in presenter mode and I don't teach all night, when I was in a good mood, I just close my eyes and bring that up. I don't need to anchor it, I'm just changing my state. I'm in control of my emotions. Yeah?
When can you think of a good time that'd be useful to change your state? Yeah, so for example, when you've had a crazy day, and maybe you're close to home and you've had a crazy day and a bad phone call, you don't want to walk into that door where you've got a beautiful family waiting for you in that state. So
yeah.
So that's a worthwhile thing to think of.
Here's an example from my life 2 days ago. I was at home, I was working on something online, got a phone call from my wife at our ballet studio that we own. Our daughter was doing a gymnastics class and she fell off something and banged her head. And my wife rang up and was screaming down the phone, Emilia's banged her head and she's got this huge lump, and she said hematoma, which means blood clot. So that's pretty scary. And I did what any parent would do. I freaked out. I'm like, oh, okay, I'll be right there. And I had my two-year-old son with me and I knew that I couldn't speed. You know what I mean? Didn't want to drive like a crazy person. So I went, okay, need to detach for the next 15 minutes to get from here to here. Put myself in a calm state, relax. Nothing I can do about it for the 15 minutes. Drove calmly to get there. Got there, handled the situation. Yeah? Does that make sense? And went past like three cop cars on the way. Probably would have got pulled over had I just gone in freaked out parent mode. Super helpful. Yeah.
One of the ones that I've used as an example before is time. So, if I asked you to run for 3 minutes flat out, how would you feel? 3 minutes would last an eternity, wouldn't it? It'd just take forever. What about if you're running 3 minutes for 3 minutes late for a meeting? How quick does 3 minutes go? It goes like that. It's all about how you are letting stuff into your mind and how you deal with it. Time goes past the same all the time. It's just how are we looking at it.
Pretty awesome, eh? Any other questions? If you had a question, what would it be? If there's no more,
I feel with, I'll need to do it a couple more times, and then I'm thinking, have I picked the right moment in history? Do I need to reflect and find a better moment to then reflect back on? Is there any tips on...
My favourite answer to 95% of questions is maybe. It's all a test. It's all a test. Did you pick the right thing? If you got the result, yes, you did. If it wasn't strong enough and you want it to be stronger, pick something else and test that too. I'm not saying it'll be right. I'm not saying it'll be wrong. It's only one way to know. I don't actually know the answer. Yeah. To what's specifically right for you.
Yeah. Perfect.
Yep.
How about another round of applause for Nick? Well done.